Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Bill Barnwell Show. Today we're going to have Marcel Louis-Jacques from ESPN on, talking about some of the recent re-signings, including Cam Newton. We're going to talk about the cuts that have popped up over the past few days in the NFL, and then talk about some of the guys who weren't franchised and where they might be heading in free agency. Before we get into today's episode, I wanted to quickly tell you that 30 for 30 podcast presents March 11th, 2020. It's the story of the day the NBA shut down and the pandemic became real for many Americans. It's as told by those who lived the events of the day and built entirely with archival and exclusive interviews, including Rudy Gobert and Dr. Anthony Fauci. March 11, 2020, will tell a story of a day that started in one reality and ended in a new one. 30 for 30 podcast presents March 11, 2020. Subscribe and listen now wherever you get your podcasts. And guys, as well, as you may have heard, Stephen A's World streams weekdays on ESPN Plus, bringing fans Stephen A. Smith's entertaining perspective and deep expertise with signature guests. The best interviews from Stephen A's World are now available as a podcast every Wednesday. So listen wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe, of course, to Stephen A's World as well as the Bill Barnwell Show, and watch Stephen A's World on ESPN Plus. And now here's Marcel Louis-Jacques to talk about the NFL.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
All right, now joining me as promised here on the Bill Barnwell Show, a busy man as we sit here on Friday afternoon with Bill's news breaking over and over again as we approach the time to record this podcast, but a man who has been kind enough to hop on despite the news breaking in Buffalo, the excellent reporter for us at ESPN, Marcel Louis-Jacques. Marcel, how are you?
I'm good. I'm flattered, but I am doing well, man. Like you said, it has been a week, but they were just so quiet, man. The Bills were so quiet the past 2 months that you just knew a storm was coming. So that storm's kind of coming home to roost right now. But there's a lot of good energy in Buffalo. A lot of fans excited about these moves. So it's kind of fun to be around.
Yeah, for sure. We're going to talk about the Bills in a second. Wanted to lead with this. Before you were covering the Bills, you were covering the Carolina Panthers. And the quarterback for the Carolina Panthers for part of the time while you were there, I believe, is a gentleman by the name of Cam Newton. Of course, you saw Cam play against the Bills this year, covering the Bills as a member of the New England Patriots. And Cam reportedly has signed today a one-year deal to return to the Patriots up to $14 million. Our Mike Reese has reported there's $6 million built in there in terms of incentives related to the Patriots' record, their playoff success, things like that, unrelated seemingly to Cam's individual performance. So we don't know exactly how much money it is yet. But just starting with Cam, number one, were you surprised to the Patriots bring him back? And number two, what did you think of him from what you saw watching him play the Bills last year?
I was a little bit surprised that they brought him back. I kind of saw it as, I don't know if failed experiment is too harsh or not, but it wasn't a success. Like, I think we can agree there. And I kind of see this as them maybe exhausting every other option. I'm sure that they wanted to trade for Stafford and Stafford shut that down. I'm not sure if they're in on Wentz, but this is probably a way for them just to say, okay, like at bare minimum, we can have a starting caliber quarterback on roster. He might not be an elite starter anymore, but like he knows the system. He's been here a year already. He's comfortable here. He'll be better than he was last year. If, you know, even if it's not maybe spectacular, I don't know if this limits them from chasing after any other quarterback in free agency. Like if the Saints let Jameis go, I don't think this stops New England from calling Jameis Winston. I don't think it stops them from calling Chicago about Trubisky just to gauge interest there. So I think this is it's kind of a fail safe more than maybe their plan the entire time.
That's what it seems like, right? You know, just that idea that, you know, given the money, if it ends up at let's say $7 million for 1 year, Like, you can pay that to a backup. That's about what the Raiders paid Marcus Mariota, I think, on an average annual salary. You can afford that. And I think, you know, in terms of his performance, it's so tough to gauge. I mean, this is a guy who, you know, was coming off of basically a year and a half out of football, who was very inconsistent, very, you know, a guy who certainly was a solid runner, inconsistent throwing the football, to say the least. You know, some games where he looked very competent. His numbers are honestly a little weighted by his performance against the Jets, which he was very good against the Jets, and, you know, ranging from pretty good to awful against the rest of the NFL. I mean, in the Bills games, you recovering. I mean, one game he fumbles late in the game to hand the Bills a crucial victory. And then he's 5 of 10 for 34 yards in the second game before being taken out in a 38-9 blowout victory for the Bills. And I think what's so tough is that last year for Cam, I mean, he was making, I think, like a $1 million base. Like, he was making close to the minimum. And at that price for a starting quarterback, like, that's pretty good. Like, having a below average starter for basically nothing is pretty solid. Like, you would rather have a great starter, but I think he was pretty good value for the Patriots last year. At this price, you know, I would imagine that this deal does not preclude them from going out and drafting a quarterback. If they want to draft Trey Lance or Mac Jones, if they want to trade up, if they want to go after someone like Ryan Fitzpatrick or the guys you mentioned, like Trubisky, you know, none of those things are removed from the table by signing Cam to this deal.
Exactly. And I didn't even mention, like, drafting a quarterback is still extremely in play, and it's cost effective too. But yeah, like, people might flinch at you know, $14 million for a guy who, you know, who might not be the starter come week one, but, like, quarterback figures they're different. Yes. Like, you stretch them a little farther, and I bet you'd be happy about to have that $14 million, you know, going to Cam if whoever is the starter in week one goes down and you need that high end to keep things afloat. So sure. I think it's worth it for them. I think they add some talent to that roster. We see a different Patriots team once those six defensive opt-outs come back in 2021. We see a far improved Patriots defense. I just give Cam something. I mean, this feels like a broken record for the past decade. Give him something to work with. It tears me apart from the inside to say that N'Keal Harry shouldn't be your best receiver. That's an ASU guy. That is my boy. I love N'Keal. Everything he did for the Sun Devils. He's not a number one NFL receiver right now. And that's, you know, Edelman isn't who he used to be. I can't even name who's their third receiver. Jacoby Myers, I guess.
Last year, his two top targets were Jacoby Myers and Damir Bird.
Yeah. So, I mean, come on, get him some help, and you're going to get your money's worth out of Cam Newton.
Yeah. I think that's absolutely fair to say, you know, and I think the classic example of a guy who did get better when you added talent around him happens to be the quarterback you cover in Buffalo and Josh Allen, where, like, each year there was more pieces surrounding him and he got better accordingly. Of course, he made improvements on his own, but we've seen the Bills repeatedly invest in, you know, bringing in what they see as the right guys, which more often than not seems to be guys from Carolina. It happens, but, you know, and then retaining their guys. And we saw two moves on Friday, which are a little surprising in terms of the timing, maybe, or in terms of being able to get those deals done, but in terms of their bigger picture, seem to make total sense in re-signing Matt Milano at linebacker and then retaining Darrell Williams, their starting right tackle from a year ago. So in terms of those moves, again, are you surprised necessarily? And what sort of stands out to you about these two contracts for the Bills?
It's kind of funny. And this just kind of goes to show that, you know, I consider myself pretty plugged in to the Bills, just because that's my life the past few years. Sure. And I can still be wrong. Like, I can still be flat wrong. I thought that Milano was as good as gone as can be. And I thought maybe they'd have to stretch things around in order to re-sign Darrell Williams. And Brandon Bean just kind of laughed in my face. And and he was working all week. And you got the sense that something big was coming. You knew that they had to clear the salary cap space. They had about $3.5 million once the league set that $182.5 million cap. They restructured Mitch Morse to clear two. They restructured Vernon Butler. They let go of John Brown, who I think was apparently the last person in the world to see it coming. Mm-hmm. And they also released Quentin Jefferson, and that gave him about $18 million to work with, maybe a little bit more. So it made a little bit more sense once mm-hmm. the numbers started to come out. Matt Milano's cap hit next year is going to be $8 million. I think that is Simone Biles level gymnastics from Brandon Bean. Yet to see the numbers on what Williams' cap hit is going to be. Mm-hmm. No real hometown discount there. They're paying him about $9.5 million average annual value there. That's about what that might be a little bit less than than an all world right tackle goal score, but it's not like he took a hometown discount mm-hmm. to get here. Like I think Milano did a little bit, but once the numbers came out, it made more sense. But entering the offseason, I just thought, man, that is he's really got his work cut out for him if he wants to bring those guys back.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, Darrell Williams this time last year was really, looking for 1-year deals. He was a guy coming off of a serious knee injury and then had a really rough year in Carolina in 2019, moving around the line. So, I think he was a guy who, it made sense for the reunion. Weren't sure if Cody Ford was going to play right tackle for the Bills and ended up kicking inside. It seems like that's the best thing for all parties involved. And certainly, I think for Darrell Williams, a guy who maybe would have got a big deal a couple of years ago if he had been able to stay healthy. So I think getting that sort of guaranteed money locked in now, or significant money, life-changing money on a multi-year deal, has to feel good. And I think absolutely in terms of Milano, there's a clear Panthers thing happening here to me, where you think about what that Panthers team was built around when Sean McDermott was there. You think back to the linebackers, right? You think about Luke Kuechly and you think about Thomas Davis, eventually Shaq Thompson. But Milano and Trey Evans, are going to be there for a long time. It seems like Evans coming up for an extension, Milano getting his deal done. It seems like the core of that defense that was so great a year ago is going to be back for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, it is. And this is, it's a part of the rebuild process that I don't think the Bills have reached or ever reached during that 17-year drought, the bringing core guys back and keeping mm-hmm. guys in place instead of having to shuffle because 4 years in, you realize something's not working. So I think this is something that Bills fans maybe entered in with a little bit of skepticism, mm-hmm. but they are, I'm telling you, it's really fun to watch the reactions every time because they are so ready for September. They're so ready for week one to start. Mm-hmm. It's been a long time since they've had consecutive optimistic seasons, not to mention just consecutive winning playoff team seasons. So I think this team, it's built to last. We'll see. We'll see the numbers on whatever Josh Allen's extension ends up being. I'd bet a decent amount of money that it's more than Dak's, somewhere between Dak and Pat Mahomes, depending on if he wants to. If he's willing to shave a little off the top to help mm-hmm. keep some guys in place. Edmonds, I think they're both a lock for that fifth year option either way.
For sure.
I don't think they're in any rush. I don't think they're in as much of a rush to sign Edmonds as they are Josh Allen, mm-hmm. but they're not exactly breaking their necks to do either of them, if that makes sense.
For sure. And we always talk about that 2017 Saints draft with Kamara and Lattimore and Ramchick, and it's an awesome draft. I don't want to take anything away from that draft. I'm not trying to compare the two, but that first Bills draft in 2017 under Brandon Bean, or not really, actually, it was technically under Sean McDermott, I suppose, because Bean wasn't there yet, if I'm not mistaken. But it was Tre'Davious White, Deion Dawkins, Matt Milano. That's a pretty good start in terms of building your core. And obviously the Bills have drafted well since then. Feels like everything is going the right way for the Bills heading into 2021.
Yeah, and that was a heck of a draft. Minus the Zay Jones pick, that was
I was trying to be positive. I didn't mention Nathan Peterman. Trying to be a friend to Bills fans. Trying to be optimistic, but you can't win them all.
You can't. Hey, look, yeah, I'll say it. I think I built up enough equity here that I can get away with this one. Like it wasn't perfect, but I think Field Yates said it yesterday. Getting three cornerstones out of a single draft mm-hmm. is considered a great draft. Like you're not going to hit on all six or seven picks. Some of them are going to flame out, but the fact that you got three high level starters in that first draft is excellent. It's excellent. So it is, it's still something to be proud of. Like, wasn't perfect, but no draft is perfect.
Right. Exactly. I think it's an absolutely awesome start to the maybe unprecedented rebuild in terms of how quickly the Bills have come along, how much they've done. I mean, and like you said, Josh Allen's deal is going to be next on the docket. Maybe not next, but certainly you would figure by the end of the offseason, the Bills are going to try and get that deal done as well. So you mentioned the releases of John Brown and Quentin Jefferson to create cap space. The Brown one may be more conspicuous because we think about, you know, offensive players a little more frequently. John Brown, of course, really impressive in 2019 as the Bills' number one receiver. Didn't have to play that same role last year after Stephon Diggs arrived. Still an effective part of the offense when he was healthy. But it seemed like he was surprised about being cut. Do you think he should have been surprised given his cap situation and given how he played in 2020?
No, I really don't. And this was like the one time, you know, how players say, like, say, oh, we don't read anything that's going on in the media. We don't pay mm-hmm. attention to outside. I actually kind of believe it in John Brown's case, because every outlet, everybody with an opinion, it kind of saw this coming. Mm-hmm. And it's even sounds like he might not have been told that it was coming, but he had to have seen the writing on the wall. He said the team went 5-0 without him. I'm not as concerned about that as I'd be, you know, at Gabriel Davis's numbers. Here's a guy mm-hmm. on a fourth round rookie contract who scored 7 touchdowns with 600 receiving yards last year, playing in your stead while you were hurt. John Brown would have cost, he would have been a $9 million cap hit in a season that, you know, that saw a $16 million decline in salary cap in, mm-hmm. in the salary cap. They saved seven or eight to let him go. It seemed really obvious to everybody around. It's not like anybody was rooting for it. I don't think mm-hmm. anybody thought on field that he's not worth having it, but at that price, it just didn't make sense. And, you know, maybe there is a possibility, maybe in some world, there's a possibility where they cut him and bring him back mm-hmm. on a cheaper deal or he agrees to a pay cut, but it didn't really make a whole lot of sense from his point. And from his perspective now, it doesn't sound like returning to Buffalo is really in the cards. But yeah, if he was not prepared for this, like if somebody didn't tell him that this was a possibility, it might be time to kind of like reevaluate who's around you, because it made a lot of sense on mm-hmm. paper.
I mean, you know, I don't want to say log on to Twitter. There's some bad things happening on Twitter, but might be a good idea to have at least some follows on Twitter. See what's going on. See if you're going to be released. That's important. Does it seem like do you think that the Bills will just promote Gabriel Davis into a bigger role as part of the John Brown release? Or do you think they would be interested in maybe adding another wide receiver at the right price?
No, I think this is Gabriel Davis's role. They are extremely high on this guy. And when you look at the receivers that were drafted, you know, that were drafted this year, if he's in another class, Gabe Davis might have gone in the top 2 rounds. Good speed, good size, great hands, runs clean routes, smart. They've trained him at every position he can play, you know. He can play X, he can play Z, he can play slot. He can play whatever you need him to do. Mm-hmm. And he kind of proved that this year. So I'd say that starting spot opposite of Stephon Diggs belongs to Gabriel Davis right now. They're not going to say it publicly. You know, everything's a competition. They want to keep guys working. And year 2 is really important, especially for a receiver. You know, as corners and defensive coordinators have a season's worth of film on you and kind of can pinpoint your weaknesses a little bit better. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's going to stop them from maybe adding, let's say, a name in the draft, a guy like, I don't know, Rondale Moore or Amari Rodgers, somebody who can maybe learn behind a Cole Beasley and eventually maybe take that position over. Mm-hmm. But or maybe a cheap free agent, like a cheap specialist at receiver, a guy like John Ross, who just mm-hmm. brings pure speed to the table and might be in need of a fresh start. Yeah. But I don't think they're going, you know, they're not going after like Kenny Galladay. They're not going after maybe even Will Fuller, mm-hmm. you know, or any of these really starting caliber Corey Davis. They're not going after a receiver like that. I don't expect.
Yeah. I mean, Gabriel Davis, for a guy who still isn't turned 22, I mean, 9.7 yards per target, 17.1 yards per catch, 7 touchdowns a year ago. I mean, a guy who was, you know, a very valuable player in his role and certainly has that starting caliber upside. So, you know, again, if the right guy's there for the right price, I would imagine they'll consider it. But a guy who has earned a larger role in his first season to me in Gabriel Davis. We talked about the cuts for the Bills. Let's talk about some of the other cuts around the NFL heading into free agency. We knew there were going to be a lot of veterans getting released or taking pay cuts because of the reduced cap number. I think 182.5 is the final number for the salary cap. A couple guys who maybe I'm surprised, but I'm not surprised in a way that the Chiefs did this. They cut Eric Fisher. They cut Mitchell Schwartz. Two guys coming off injuries. Fisher had a torn Achilles in the, of course, the win over the Bills in the AFC Championship game. Mitchell Schwartz missed most of the season with a back injury, underwent surgery after the year. So both guys recovering from serious injuries. But, I mean, for the Chiefs and for Patrick Mahomes, I mean, this is a guy you have under contract for the next seemingly century. How important is it to you, if you're the Chiefs organization, to fill those holes at tackle? I mean, are you devoting every dollar you have to it? Are you going to hope that you can develop guys? Like, how do you see the Chiefs proceeding this offseason?
Oh, that is, it's got to be priority number one, right? Because, I mean, your offensive, your skill position players are in place.
Sure.
You can address your run defense a little bit as well. But, I mean, we're a couple months removed from an absolute shellacking in the Super Bowl, mm-hmm. because your offensive line couldn't hold up. So I think this is it could be any number of things. It could be an indictment against Fisher and Schwartz's health, the fact that they were deemed expendable. It's also kind of a, I don't want to say flex, but it's kind of confidence on the part of the Chiefs front office and saying, mm-hmm. This is our biggest issue, and we can still afford to release our starters, our bookended starters, because we know we're going to draft well. We are going to hit hard in free agency. We're going to find suitable replacements, and they kind of need to, because if you're paying all that money to Patrick Mahomes, he's not going to make it without an offensive line. He's not going to play out that deal if you don't protect him.
Right. I mean, it'd be one thing if he had just been great all the time and it was like, you can make it work with anybody. We just saw the exact game that happens when you don't protect Patrick Mahomes even a tiny bit. It cost them the Super Bowl realistically. So, I mean, I think they have to be in the running for Trent Williams. There's going to be a lot of linemen we're talking about in a minute who are free agents. Let's talk about them now, actually. You got Riley Reiff cut by the Vikings, Kevin Zeitler cut by the Giants, Trey Turner cut by the Chargers just before we get on the air, Gabe Jackson, and I think Richie Incognito as well, cut by the Raiders. I mean, this is a position where I feel like the Bills are the classic example where they invested so much in depth and so much in having as many people in front of Josh Allen as possible. So, I mean, do you think that we're going to see a lot of interest in these guys? John Feliciano, of course, is a free agent as well. But the Bills, I mean, do you think we're going to see a market where those guys do get a lot of money, or just because of the sheer volume of guys out there, do you think it's going to be a lot of these guys settling for one-year deals for less money?
I think it's the latter. I think because the market is so saturated right now that you're going to see guys start to settle for a little bit less. And I thought that, you know, once the guys like Zeitler, once, you know, Trey Turner was announced to be available, once Joe Thuney it was announced that they weren't going to franchise him over up in New England, maybe, wow, like this is, if you're Buffalo and you want to keep John Feliciano, this is big because his price just kind of went down based on the number of people available. You would imagine, at least Gabe Jackson as well. So I think you're going to see guys kind of maybe settle for either backloaded deals, like something like Milano just did here, where, you know, his cap hit is small right now and will increase in the last couple of years of his contract, or just sign something quick for now. You know, you try to maybe sign on to a contender, maybe try to win a Super Bowl here, and then go get your money when the salary cap presumably bounces back next year.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. And I think there's absolutely going to be a bargain or two in this bunch. I mean, you know, these are guys who were valued at the top of the market. Kevin Zeitler was one of the highest paid guards in football. Trey Turner, you know, same thing. I have to feel like there's going to be at least one of these guys where we're sitting here in December. We're just like, how did this guy sign for 1 year and $6 million? Like, you know, the Chiefs are going to sign him or the Patriots are going to sign them. And we're just going to be like, oh, we should have known this whole time. Or the Bills maybe might sign someone. Who knows? Absolutely. I feel like some of these guys are going to be bargains. The Saints, I feel like it has become a meme in and of itself. The Saints just in, they're in dire cap straits and still simultaneously somehow franchising Marcus Williams. They're an absolute mystery. They're a delight to see operate in some strange ways, but Janoris Jenkins, Emmanuel Sanders, and Malcolm Brown most recently all released by the Saints. I mean, with Emmanuel Sanders, I think maybe he's the most interesting of the bunch. Is that a guy who you think is going to have a significant offer on the table this offseason? Or do you think, again, because of the depth, he's probably looking at a one-year deal for less than he made in New Orleans, which was somewhere, I think, in the 6 to 7 range. Like, do you think that there is going to be a lot of interest in someone like Emmanuel Sanders, given his, you know, given his sort of veteran nature, given his experience, given his success in the past, and given the role he played for the Saints a year ago?
Yeah, I think he's one of the most underrated number two receivers in the game right now, or at least over the past, we'll call it 5-6 years. You know, consistent guy that can get you, maybe we'll call it 700 yards and a handful of scores. He's probably, you probably shouldn't, you know, he's not the focal point of your offense, as I think San Francisco found out, as Denver maybe found out toward the latter, toward the end of his tenure there. But I mean, he's a guy, if, you know, you've already got a number one in place, that he could come in and maybe help you out. Like if New England lands a big number one receiver, you can also add Emmanuel Sanders to that and just completely retool, you know, completely retool your room. You know, I don't think he goes, he's not going anywhere like Buffalo. I don't think he shouldn't be the jewel, like the crown of your class, but I think he's going to have interest. I don't think he's going to be a guy who, you know, maybe slides onto a roster midseason. He should find his way onto a team before the start of training camp.
Mm-hmm. Makes total sense. Let's talk about some of the guys who weren't franchised. We'll finish up with this because I feel like these are different players who, because of whether it was their team's financial circumstances, whether it was because they weren't necessarily, you know, those teams weren't in a position to offer $16, $17, $18 million a year for some of these guys, whether it was that those players are going to be replaced elsewhere. A bunch of guys who I thought might have been franchised by their teams or were certainly candidates to get franchised, who are going to hit the open market. And I wanted them to think about where they might end up around the NFL. And I think the first guy that comes to mind for me is Kenny Golladay. And of course, I can see why the Lions would do this, coming off of an injury, new front office, or new head coaching staff. Dan Campbell's philosophy seems to be about eating people's kneecaps. I'm not sure I totally understand that part of it yet. Kenny Golladay is very tall. I don't think he makes sense for that strategy, but I am intrigued to see what you think the market is going to be for Kenny Golladay. I mean, in terms of the places he might go, where do you think Kenny Golladay is going to be looking? Where do you think Kenny Golladay is going to end up?
And I know I just mentioned them in regards to Emmanuel Sanders, mm-hmm. but I think New England kind of leads this list right now. They need a number one. They need an alpha. Kenny Golladay is an alpha. If you can thrive in Detroit, you can thrive anywhere. I think Baltimore is probably right behind him as well. Mm-hmm. Hollywood Brown is, you know, he's an electric talent. He's fun to watch, you know, when he gets a little bit of space. He's not a number one receiver. Mm-hmm. And I don't know I think the Ravens maybe figured that out, you know, over the past couple of years. Add a guy like Kenny Golladay, though, all of a sudden Marquise Brown sees more one-on-one coverage because you can't shade away from Golladay. And I think it opens things up for both of them and opens up that offense. They're already, you know, so effective on the ground. This gives Lamar Jackson a true threat through the air. Let's see him start to evolve as well. I think, those are probably the top two teams I'm looking at. I think Miami might be a sleeper for him, but they're better suited to draft a receiver than they are to sign a big one.
Yeah, I mean, his third overall pick, you'd figure they're going to have their choice of the wide receivers in this class. Looks like there's some incredible talents really at the top of the class. I mean, you watch that Ravens-Bills game in the playoffs. To me, it felt like a game where that would be the perfect example of why Lamar Jackson needs that receiver to work with, because, you know, not that Lamar was perfect in that game by any means, he wasn't, but it felt like there were so many times in that game where he dropped back and he just waited and waited and waited, and either nobody was open or he didn't have the confidence to throw a 50-50 ball up to any of his guys. I mean, that just seems like the, you know, if the Ravens have that game stuck in their head, and since they got eliminated from the postseason, you figured they do, I wonder if that makes them more likely to go after Kenny Golladay.
Yeah. And yeah, that game was so, I mean, obviously I was on my couch, you know, dealing with COVID at the time. Mm-hmm. So forgive me if my memory is not as sharp, but Willie Snead played a lot more than I ever expected Willie Snead to play in 2021. And I think that was probably, no offense to him, but like that's not your number two receiver, man.
Right.
Like if you're trying to win a Super Bowl, that I don't think it works like that. So I think that will be, I think adding an elite option really would just take that offense to the next level. And I want to see that for Lamar. Like, I don't want to see his prime get wasted on read options and second round exits. I want this team to have a chance.
Man had COVID and he's still correct. Willie Snead, 72% of the snaps for the Bills Ravens in that game.
Am I hallucinating, or is Willie Snead still on the field?
Willie Snead is just constantly on the field for the Baltimore Ravens. It's fair. I mean, you know, and he's fine. Again, like, I don't want to disparage Willie Snead. He has a role on your roster, but you don't want to be sitting there back in the pocket, 3-4 seconds have elapsed, waiting to throw, and you're hoping Willie Snead like works his way open. Like, you want to have someone you can rely upon. And I think Kenny Golladay absolutely makes sense for the Ravens. I think the Jets also come to mind as a team that could add something at receiver for, whether it's Sam Darnold or any other quarterbacks outside of Trevor Lawrence, who they might take with the second overall pick. Another receiver who was rumored at least to be, you know, maybe linked to the Bills. I don't know how much you feel about that, but Jonnu Smith, the top tight end, presumably on the market alongside Hunter Henry, not franchised by Tennessee. Do you think he goes to the Bills? And if he doesn't go to the Bills, where do you think he might end up?
Now, this is where things get a little interesting, because I thought maybe if Buffalo brought back Feliciano, mm-hmm, and found a way to keep Williams, that maybe they're more in the running for another big, you know, a big name free agent. Mm-hmm. But I'm a little unsure at this point, since they brought back Milano, who was on the higher end of their in-house unrestricted guys. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how much money is going to be left over. There are a couple other options that they a couple other needs that I think they'd rather fill first. Defensive end, most notably, I think adding a guy like Carl Lawson is going to take a lot of your cap room.
Yeah.
And I think it would be probably the best possible move for them at this point. But if not, like, if they miss on Lawson and they're committed to addressing their pass rush via the draft, then I think Jonnu Smith is right there at the top of their list. Mm-hmm. You know, Hunter Henry is probably going to be the most expensive tight end in this class, but Jonnu Smith fits what they need out of that position, which is a guy who can catch and run, mm-hmm, at that spot. Defenses are going to focus on Stephon Diggs. They can't ignore Cole Beasley as well. You know, Cole Beasley's open every single play. Mm-hmm. They need a guy at that tight end position as well, you know, who can fill in gaps from here, you know, throughout the field and make something happen with the ball in his hands. I think they like what Dawson Knox does once he catches it. Mm-hmm. It's just the catching it has been kind of a struggle for him over the past 2 years. And but he is an effective runner after the catch. Like, that can't be denied. But I mean, I thought it was really powerful that Brandon Bean came out and told us that, you know, he doesn't think any opponent came into Bills week and said, we need a game plan for Buffalo's tight ends. And that was very much an indictment on the current tight ends they have on roster. But I also wouldn't rule out a trade for Zach Ertz at this, mm-hmm, point. You have an extra fifth round pick. I don't know how much it's going to cost to get him out of Philadelphia, but you can imagine, you know, that relationship has deteriorated. They are looking to get anything for him. They're looking to get anything for anyone, as you know, shown in the Carson Wentz trade. But I wouldn't rule that out either. But either way, I think Buffalo looks to upgrade that tight end position.
Man, I'm jealous I didn't think of that now. That's like such a I can imagine Zach Ertz wearing the Bills jersey, making a big catch in week one, and like people just freaking out in the stands. I can absolutely see that happen. I wish I thought of that now. Damn.
Oh man, you'll feel it. You know, you'll feel the if the playoff game against Indy was any indication, these people might actually shake the stadium down. It might actually break they're there full strength.
That's like, I think the team I'm most excited to see get their fans back for week one. I want to see the Raiders in their new building with maybe Raiders fans. I'm not sure who's going to be going to the games in Vegas. Like, they sell out, but I'm not sure if it's going to be people just driving up. I want to see that, like the people coming from Las Vegas, coming from Oakland, coming from Southern California to Vegas for Raiders games. I want to see probably Eagles fans booing week one, like halfway through the first quarter. When someone drops a pass, but I'm of course really excited to see the Bills and their fans for week one, hopefully in 2021. A couple other guys who come to mind, Aaron Jones, Packers running back, very effective the past 2 years, always kind of felt like they didn't trust him as like the true number one, getting 80-85% of the snaps, was always kind of in a timeshare with Jamal Williams when he was healthy. And of course they invested a lot elsewhere, not in great cap shape. So not always a surprise that they let him leave, but in terms of his market, I mean, it seems like everyone is pegging him to go to Miami. Are you kind of in that discussion as well?
Yeah, I was going to say Miami. I could also see him going to New York, to the Jets. Obviously they're interested in investing in their run game. That's why they signed Le'Veon Bell a couple years ago. Especially if they're keeping Sam Darnold, this is a way, you know, you want to protect him. You want to surround him with talent, get a good ground game, give him a good running back who operates as both an effective runner and an effective receiver out of the backfield, you know, as a safety valve. That's the way to do it. So Miami might be the favorite, but I wouldn't sleep on the Jets.
Yeah. Jets are on my list too. A team I threw out there, I don't know if you feel this way, maybe you don't. What about Seattle? A team that we know wants to win now. Chris Carson is also a free agent, did not get franchised. Team that's been comfortable spending this kind of money on a running back in the past. Of course, with Marshawn Lynch being such a cornerstone of those early Legion of Boom teams. Not a ton of cap space, obviously. We're going to talk about one of the guys they're letting leave in a moment. But I wonder if Seattle might try to appease Russell Wilson by adding a significant player who's not only effective as a runner, but like you said, also effective as a receiver. For someone who can maybe catch those checkdowns, catch those screens, and take some of the pressure off Russell Wilson, you know, early in plays.
That would be really interesting to see. I think, he's got a similar skill set then to Chris Carson, just probably, you know, just a little better.
Yeah, that's fair.
A little better at probably everything. And I think especially if Pete Carroll gets his way, if they're still, you know, committed to the Pete Carroll way, that running back is a massive priority. I'm curious to see, you know, what the impact of this Russell Wilson temper tantrum is. Do they just fully commit, say, okay, like we're going to go all in on letting Russ cook. We're gonna get you as many weapons as possible. We're gonna address the offensive line. We'll get a serviceable enough running back. I think Rashad Penny is coming back, or he should be healthy.
Yes, true.
So they do have, you know, they have a first round pick invested in him. They might want to ride that out for a year before going all in on the position again.
Totally.
But I don't know. I think it'd be a curious fit. And I wonder what Russ would think of that. Cause I mean, he's not going to come cheap. And I would think you could spend that money on an offensive lineman or two.
Yeah, that's totally fair. I mean, you might rather have Kevin Zeitler and Gabe Jackson as opposed to Aaron Jones. So always intriguing. The story underneath the story for the Seahawks, I feel like, is fascinating when we see what they do over the next week. A couple other guys here we'll finish up with. Shaq Griffin, starting cornerback for Seattle, hitting the market. Thought he might be franchised. Of course, we know they have to give Jamal Adams a big contract this offseason. But for Shaq Griffin, A guy who was, you know, looking like a number one cornerback at times over his run with the Seahawks. Do you think there's any place that stands out to you as a likely landing spot for him?
I got to see what their cap looks like, especially what they're doing with Von Miller, but maybe Denver, a team that's kind of been eschewing its starting corners now for a couple seasons. Obviously Chris Harris is gone. Boy, it didn't work out, but a team that needs it, a guy in Vic Fangio, who, you know, that his focus is on that side of the ball.
Yeah.
They, you know, that's what they want to pride themselves on. Shaq Griffin, like you said, was looking like a number one corner. I think, you know, depending on what kind of money they've got to play with, I think Denver could be an option.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. I thought about teams who have former Seahawks as defensive coordinators, former Seahawks employees as defensive coordinators. Two teams came to mind for me. The Jets, we talked about a lot, seemingly, but they have Robert Saleh, of course, as their DC. Questions at cornerback there. And then Dan Quinn with the Cowboys, where could see them going after a cornerback. They certainly gave up a ton of big plays last year and could afford to, or certainly could justify spending money on the defensive side of the ball. But I think Denver makes a lot of sense as well. Set it on the slot with Bryce Callahan, but have a little bit of money to work with, especially when we see what happens with Von Miller. I think a lot of people think he's going to be released or take a pay cut or maybe redo a new deal, but basically a change happening there. He's not going to come back and his given salary. So I think absolutely Denver is a team that, you know, they're expecting to be in the postseason this year, hoping to be in the postseason this year, could go out and spend a lot of money on a number one cornerback. Guy I want to finish with here is Hassan Reddick, a player who kind of an afterthought for his time in Arizona, started at linebacker, moved around, a great athlete coming out of Temple, but almost a guy where his versatility was a problem as opposed to a strength. This year, Chandler Jones gets hurt. Hassan Reddick is moved into a full-time edge rushing role, and man, 12 and a half sacks, broke out, 16 quarterback knockdowns, a huge season for Hassan Reddick. So what do you think this means? I mean, we've seen players in the past where they get that one-year deal or they break out in the final year of their contract, and then, you know, it's sort of tough to value them. It's tough to tell whether they're going to be that guy going forward. I think Jordan Phillips might be a similar example for the Bills, where he had that 9.5 sack season in 2019. Of course, a defensive tackle as opposed to an edge rusher. And the Bills said, okay, you know, you did that great, but it was 1 year. We're going to let you go. We're going to spend our money elsewhere. Do you think that there is a big market for Hassan Reddick, given the sort of, you know, short track record of production, but also at a position that everyone needs more edge rushers?
Yeah, I think somebody's going to be willing to take a shot, especially, you know, maybe one of the teams that's got buku money to work with, like maybe Indy. You know, they're Justin Houston's getting a little old, a guy who's, you know, who's thrived as kind of a hybrid edge rusher linebacker. I think, you know, Reddick could be an immediate replacement or play alongside of him and be a long-term replacement. I think he's going to have some sort of market. Just like, I mean, Jordan Phillips had a market and 9.5 sacks seemed a little fluky, but he still turned it into $10 million a year. Mm-hmm. So I think somebody, you know, one of these teams that's got money to burn, one of these rare teams that has money to burn this offseason is going to let him have some.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Marcel, I mean, the Bills did a lot of work today, but still you figure they might be active in free agency. Where can people check out your coverage of the Bills?
ESPN.com. ESPN.com's Buffalo Bills page is the easiest way, most streamlined way. It's got everything I've been working on this week, next week, and last week. My Twitter page also, I'm putting everything up on there, putting everything up on Instagram as well, at MarcelESPN on Instagram. On Twitter, it's at Marcel_LJ. Active on both, you know, and not just sports. So if you want something beyond the robotic coverage, I will hopefully provide it.
Excellent follow. Also good Buffalo food suggestions if you want to check that out as well. Always love reading Marcel. Marcel, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Appreciate you having me on, Bill. Always a pleasure.
All right. Thanks so much, as always, to my friend Marcel Louis Jacques. Excellent work covering the Bills. Excellent Twitter follow as well. So go ahead and follow him there. Check out his Bills coverage. And we'll have more audio coming next week. Free agency on the way. Don't know when exactly we're going to record. Depends on when the news breaks. But we will have plenty of discussion about all things free agency next week here on the Bill Barnwell Show. Thanks so much for listening.